Welcome to Northern Goal, a football podcast from the Evening Express and Press and Journal. I'm Ryan Crile, and today I'm joined by Danny Law, Jamie Durrant, and Paul Third. But we're not alone. We also have the doyen of Highland League football, who's with us to discuss the start of the Highland League season, but also all the other matters on the table today. Dave Edwards, how are we, folks?
Delighted to be here.
All grand, thanks.
Thank you. Thanks.
Excellent. Right, well, we will get to the Highland League eventually, but there's a lot to get through first. We've got all our other teams, all our league teams in action. Where we'll start is, of course, at Ibrox on Sunday. Aberdeen losing 4-0 to Rangers. Danny, you were the man that was down in Govan for the Press and Journal. Let's start with the thing that happened before the game on Saturday. Three Dons players ruled out because of a COVID-19 outbreak on Scotland under 21 duty, believed to be Ross McCrory that tested positive, while Lewis Ferguson and Conor McLennan were ruled out as close contacts. It seems like a bit of a shambles, would that be right to say?
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. It was very difficult for Aberdeen to prepare for the game. They had Lewis Ferguson and Conor McLennan were both due to start, and they'd set up that way. They had to, in the end, they had to stay late at Aberdeen on Saturday to run through an extra training session to readjust their shape. I think Ian Maxwell from the Scottish FA has already came out and apologised, so that is an admission that while these three players and the other players from the other clubs across Scotland have been caught up in this, that there was an admission that they didn't do enough to protect them. I mean, clubs at the moment just now were spending so much money on testing and making their training grounds and stadia as secure as they can be. So, I mean, it's no surprise that Derek McInnes after that game has came out and said that testing should be mandatory for all players when they return from international duty. It's surprising that, I guess, some clubs would allow a player to come straight back into the squad who has been abroad and to re-enter their bubble without testing. The only reason that this was discovered was because Aberdeen and Celtic test their players when they come back from international duty. And so, I mean, the infuriating thing, I think, from an Aberdeen perspective was that these players, like Ferguson and McLennan, are having to self-isolate just now on the basis of where they were sat on the buses and the planes that they used when they were away to Greece. And you would think that if they've been told to sit in these exact seats, that they should be spread out enough so that if someone did test positive, that they wouldn't have to self-isolate as a consequence of that. So, I mean, I can understand why, I mean, not just Derek McInnes, but Neil Lennon with David Turnbull at Celtic and Motherwell as well, Stephen Robinson, are all unhappy with this situation. And yeah, definitely something needs to be done. Needs to be a more thorough examination of what's going on when these players are away on international duty. Because, I mean, Aberdeen were definitely put at a disadvantage with having two key players missing out in that game.
That's obviously the real issue here, isn't it? I know Derek McInnes said that he thought after a coach tested positive, the rest of the squad and the rest of the coaching staff should have been tested again before they travelled to Greece. But the SFA's medics have kind of said, I think rightly, Courtney Efton and us have seen that there's an incubation period. So even if people had picked up the virus at that point, they wouldn't have shown to have picked up the virus. But it's the travel arrangements, players not being spaced out enough, coaches not being spaced out enough. And this thing that's come to light, as you said, about the fact that clubs aren't obligated to test when they return, or the SFA don't test when they return from these trips. So if the clubs aren't taking the Aberdeen the safety first approach, the Celtic safety first approach, there's the potential that a Ross McCrory walks back into training the next day and infects all of his teammates, which could end up derailing the whole season. That it's beggar's belief that the SFA haven't put rules in place to prevent something like that happening. Surely
you took the words out of my mouth there, because I had it beggar's belief. That's what I've written on my notepad here, that we're coming towards the end of November and we don't have uniformity across the board in terms of testing protocols in this country. Now, I mean, we can look at this from an Aberdeen point of view, but looking at it nationally, I mean, the SFA Chief Executive Ian Maxwell apologised yesterday for what had happened. And despite his apology, he says there's an investigation underway. And he went through the testing process, but there's still so many questions here. I mean, off the top of my head, I scribbled three. I'd like to know what the social distancing measures that are in place when players are on international duty. I'd like to know, are the squad members all side by side on planes and buses? And if you're Derek McInnes, why is he finding out, as he claims, that his players are not going to be able to play from seeing it on Sky TV on a Saturday? This whole sorry episode has just been a shambles for the country, and it's worsened when you look at the situation now that Shelley Kerr, the women's national team head coach, is facing. She's now having to isolate and isn't taking charge of two vital European qualifiers against Portugal and Finland. I mean, what on earth is going on here?
Yeah, I mean, I think to answer one of your questions there, Paul, I mean, I think that's why we've said that the reason that the players have had to self-isolate is it's those players that were sat within two rows of the players who tested positive. And that's something that Dennis McInnes said afterwards. He had no idea that this was the case, that he says that's the first that I've heard of it being this two-row policy on the buses. So it was some of the players that were sat, I guess, in the immediately the row behind or whatever. So it wasn't players that were necessarily sat next to each other, but they went and they looked back at where they sat in the buses and the plane, and as a result of that. And so, and McInnes was also saying, well, if that's the case, then perhaps we shouldn't have players from the same club sat close to each other on, if that's going to be the situation. But I mean, he seemed to be surprised that that was the basis that players were having to be ruled out and self-isolate, because you would think that they should be spread out enough on the planes and buses that shouldn't be a factor.
And all this from a governing body that is punishing players and, well, I suppose clubs, because if players are banned, clubs suffer as well for COVID breaches and lapses in protocol. So, what a mess. Anyway, it's probably the punishment we all deserve for Scotland doing well a couple of weeks ago. First we had bad results to follow, and now we've had this shambles at the SFA. Anyway, on the Rangers game. So, difficult circumstances, as we've said already, with so many players out because there were a lot of injuries as well. To the likes of Johnny Hayes, Dylan McGeoch, players like that, Niall McGinn. But safe to say, Danny, isn't it, the performance still wasn't good enough? And what do you think went wrong?
Well, I mean, I think you knew after about 5 minutes that it was going to be a tough afternoon for Aberdeen. I mean, Rangers are just now playing with a lot of confidence. This was the first time that I'd seen Rangers playing in the flesh this season, and I was quite taken aback, actually, by the speed with which they play at and their movement off the ball. And I think even with Aberdeen's strongest 11 in there, it would have been a very difficult game. It was a big ask for Funes Ojo and Greg Lee in the middle of the park to come in, having not really played. It was a bit of a thankless task, really, especially when you're not match fit, to try and go up against that. I thought the positives were probably Ryan Hedges and, to a degree, Sam Cosgrove. And I guess getting Dean Campbell some minutes towards the end was also a boost. I wouldn't be surprised to see him come in for start maybe one of the next two. But yeah, it was a disappointing day for Aberdeen. They didn't really look at any stage like they were going to be able to come away from Ibrox with a positive result, but with the caveat as well that they're going up against a team that are in playing with a lot of confidence just now.
But the thing about this, Danny, is when you look at the guys that came into the team on Sunday, Shea Logan, Funso Ojo, and albeit Greg Lee's playing out of position, but it's three pretty experienced players coming in. I'm not singling them out as collectively it's a really poor performance, but the manager's hopes of seeing his team produce an improved display from their performance on the opening day of the season was dashed by what was really a really poor showing at Ibrox from his whole team collectively.
Do you think, Danny, that the Dons maybe set up the wrong way? I know that they're going there low on confidence because of what's happened with injuries and players being missing for COVID reasons. But they seem to be really standoffish. There seemed to be a sort of approach to start with that was to sit deep and try and absorb the pressure. But the Dons just didn't look like they could get out for the first two goals. I mean, first of all, Funso Ojo gets megged by Ryan Kent. And then between about halfway in the edge of the Dons box, there's no player gets near Kent to try and get in the way of the shot that eventually is deflected off Tommy Hoban and goes in. For the second goal, Kemar Roofe, he cuts inside, and Greg Lee on the edge of the box misses a tackle that would have sort of stopped that move in its tracks. Charlie Mulgrew also raised on Sky, which I thought was a very salient point, the fact that the man marking system the Dons employ is a bit of an issue because it basically leads to players running all over the shop and getting each other's way and kind of confusion and no one really taking the responsibility to actually put in a challenge for the ball. Do you think the Dons played better when McInnes clearly told them to kind of push up a little bit?
I think so. I mean, we weren't sure whether it was going to be a three or a four-man defence. I think they were probably right to go with the four, given that Rangers play with quite a bit of width and generally a 4-3-3 formation. I think Aberdeen just really struggled to get to grips with Rangers. Like they do move the ball around very quickly and unsettle teams, and they kind of play in those little pockets of space that make it quite difficult for a lot of their attacking players. Go in that sort of, they tend to like that gap in between defence and midfield, and it leaves the central defenders wondering, well, if I drop into that gap, am I going to leave quite a big area behind where it could be exposed? I think Aberdeen just really struggled in the early stages to get on top of that. And then I guess once you fall a couple of goals behind, then it just becomes a tougher and tougher afternoon. They could have set up differently, but I'm not necessarily sure that would have necessarily had that much of a difference. I think it was more, that if they'd been able to gain more of a foothold early on in the game and get on the ball and pass it about, then perhaps that would have been a better way to try and ease the situation. But I think they just didn't really recover from going behind early on, and from then it didn't really, like, they were going to have the belief that they could get back into the game.
Funso Ojo obviously hadn't played in a while. I think he got hooked at halftime in a 3-0 loss to Motherwell, and his early performances this season were totally different to the ones we'd seen before this last season was curtailed. He looked a kind of shell of the player he was. What do we think, based on, obviously, he might have another couple of chances to show what he can do, but what do we think about Funso Ojo at the moment? Is it just a confidence thing? What's his place in the squad just now?
I think it's a difficult one to place just now as to what he brings to the team. I mean, it's obviously difficult kind of coming in from the cold to a game against Rangers where you're already kind of missing your kind of best midfield players. But as you can see, he's kind of gradually slipped further and further down the pecking order since he arrived last summer, because as he brought, Derek McInnes brought in Dylan McGeoch in January, as another central midfield player, and then Ross McCrory arrived in the summer, and there's kind of three players that you would assume would want to be starting every week, and he's not going to drop Ferguson. So where does Funso Ojo fit into that? And I guess kind of our expectations are that he kind of produces the goods when he comes into the team, but then again, it's going to be difficult if he's in and out for a couple of games and then he's not seen for a few weeks, comes on in a bit of a cameo role, or has to come back in a situation like this where there's midfield players missing. I honestly don't know what the future holds for him at Pittodrie. They'd obviously spent money on him to bring him to the club in the first place, but if he was proving his worth to Derek McInnes from the start, would they have kind of gone and got the other central midfielders they've got? Possibly not.
Good point. Obviously, Andy Constantine, I won't dwell too long on this, Andy Constantine gives away a pen, hauling down Liam Balogun in the second half. Do we think that was, it looked like a pen to me. I know McInnes said it was soft after the game, but if you put two hands on opposition player in the box and sort of pull them back and they go down, it's probably a spot kick. Agreed?
There wasn't much in it, but you've seen them given. It was one of those kind of offences. You'd be appealing for it if it's your team.
Okay. So I think the positive we can probably all take from the game is the fact that despite how under the cosh Aberdeen were for long periods, Ryan Hedges, again, he was playing on the right as opposed to through the middle where he's been most effective this season, but he was still really influential for the Dons. He was their shining light. He was breaking at speed, no fear to kind of run at players. And he looked, if someone was going to pull a goal back for the Dons or create a goal for the Dons, it was going to be Ryan Hedges. Were you impressed with him? Do you think that's a sign that when the rest of the team's playing well, that Hedges is going to be a force to be reckoned with all season long?
Yeah, I was really impressed with him, especially the first half. He had a couple of decent opportunities, but he looked really in the mood for it. So it was unfortunate for him, and he played actually quite well, because like you say, he's predominantly been deployed sort of through the middle, but he was getting a lot of the ball, getting on it, and looked lively whenever he did. I mean, he was probably quite unlucky to miss out on selection for Wales in the recent international break. But I mean, he's had a good season so far, and I think he could be a really key player over these next two games. And particularly, I mean, the game against Hamilton, you would fancy Aberdeen, whatever team they face, to be strong enough in that one. But the cup game down at St Mirren on Saturday night is obviously a nervy one with there being so much at stake in the cup. So that is where you're really looking for a player like Ryan Hedges to come to the fore.
It's funny, we talk about Hedges, you compare him with Funsu Ojo, and they're both in the same boat, I guess, when the season ends, and that they're in and out of the team. Neither guy's really established himself. But look at the difference since they came back for this new campaign. Hedges has been a breath of fresh air, a new player, like a new signing, if we want to use that cliche. He's really come in, hit the ground running, and hasn't looked back. Ojo, in contrast, is still... we're struggling to see his identity being put on this Aberdeen team.
Okay. So, if Hibs win tonight against St Johnstone, they actually go above the Dons at the third, but Dons are playing Hamilton in the league, a game that was postponed for the previous COVID incident earlier in the season, so they can go back into third place. So that's a big game for Aberdeen. It also draws them, I think, a 1 point behind Celtic in second, which when you think of it, some of the doom and gloom you see on Sunday, it's not all bad. But they need to win this one, don't they? And then they, of course, need to beat St Mirren in the Betfred Cup at the weekend.
Yeah, and the St Mirren game as well. I mean, St Mirren are unbeaten in six games, albeit not against the toughest of opposition. But since losing that game 2-1 at Pittodrie against Aberdeen at the start of October, they've been on a pretty positive run. And they've also got, a free week to prepare for this game, whereas Aberdeen will be playing midweek with a depleted squad. So, I mean, Aberdeen beat St Mirren down there in the Scottish Cup last season, but this isn't certainly not a straightforward cup tie, not as straightforward as it would have been had it been at Pittodrie. So it's going to be a tricky one, and one that Aberdeen will be pretty relieved if they manage to get through it and progress, which they should be able to do. They should be strong enough to do that even with the players they've got missing, but it's a tricky cup tie for the last 16.
If I was Derek McInnes and his players, I wouldn't be disappointed to have a chance to put Sunday behind them as quickly as they do tomorrow night at Hamilton. Derek McInnes will be expecting a response from his players, and I would hope the players themselves want to respond to Sunday's disappointment. Aberdeen's hopes of staying in touch with Rangers at the top really took a severe dent at the weekend, but they're still close to Celtic, and it's a Celtic team that's misfiring at the moment. So games like tomorrow's are vital for Aberdeen if they want to be staying on the heels of Neil Lennon's team. As for Saturday, well, the League Cup is a realistic chance of silverware, and the Dons fans will be expecting to see their team go through in that one.
Okay. Should also be noted that a few weeks ago we were speaking about Aberdeen having three chances at trophies this season. They obviously went out of last season's Scottish Cup, the semi-final stage to Celtic. We wouldn't want to see them go out in the Betfred Cup so soon. Next up, though, we'll move on after close to 20 minutes on Aberdeen. We'll move on to Ross County's defeat at Kilmarnock at the weekend. Oh, God. Okay, so Ross County at the weekend. Down at Rugby Park, what a start, 8 minutes in. Stuart Finlay slides in to get in front of Ross Stewart, knocks the ball back to his keeper, but he gets sent off. I think it probably all agree that it was pretty unjust. He got the ball. It wasn't a dangerous tackle or anything. But it's an early fortunate bonus for County. So tell me, Jamie, how do they go on to lose that game 3-1?
Well, kind of watching the game back and looking at the way the goals were conceded, you can pinpoint kind of defensive mistakes in all of them. I mean, for the first goal, he's allowed a kind of a clear run from the set piece to kind of head it in. There's no one kind of challenging him there. The second one, it's obviously a Cole Donaldson's kind of, he's tried to control the ball and go to clear it, but then he's not seen the Kilmarnock player coming in, and he's just kind of swiped at him. I mean, it did look to go down kind of fairly easy, but it's one of those where he's put the referee in a position to make a decision. And then for the third one, you could argue that Chris Burke's got to be closed down before he gets a chance to get a shot away. And that's kind of really what's undone him. I think that's what will disappoint Stuart Kettlewell most, in that it's a game where from such an early stage, you've got the advantage of having the extra man. And it's not like they didn't create chances, because they did. They had plenty of kind of opportunities to get back into the game. I think Ross Stewart's missed a great one from Josh Reid's cross, and then Josh Reid himself has had an opportunity that Danny Rogers has pulled off a great save to keep out. So there were chances there for County to get back into the game. But when you're kind of losing goals kind of relatively cheaply in a manner that you would hope to prevent, then you're always going to give yourself a mountain to climb in any game.
Is this the most depressing start to a Northern Goal podcast we've done. Ross County shot themselves in the foot. The defending was poor, and they committed the cardinal sin of giving the team with 10 men something to hang on to by conceding that goal straight after Kelly had out of 10 men. It's funny, I remember when Steve Clark was in charge at Kilmarnock, and they had a game up at Pittodrie, and Mikey Devlin was sent off really early for the Dons, and the difference there was Kilmarnock put the resulting free kick in the back of the net and go on to win comfortably against Aberdeen. 8 minutes in, County fans are looking at that game at Rugby Park thinking, oh, surely we're gonna go on and win this. We're disappointed if it's a draw. So to come away losing 3-1 is probably as bad as it gets in the circumstances.
It's the same old story, isn't it, for County this season. It seems to take them a load of chances to get the ball in the back of the net at one end. And at the other end, it's like the goals are just so cheap. They're so uncontested at times, or it's a penalty, as I've put in our plan for this little episode today. If you add up the penalties given away by Col Donaldson and Ian Vigers at the back, it's 7 penalties so far this season, and that's not all the penalties. I think Josh Reid's given away a pen as well. It's just, it's clumsiness. It's so frustrating at times because they play good attacking football. I think Ross Stewart's really struggling at the moment to put the ball in the back of the net, but I think it's summed up Saturday's game for me is a moment after halftime. This is a game they should be dominating. They should be on the front foot. They should be tiring out the opposition for down to 10 men. And instead, they let Kirk Broadfoot run from centre-back all the way from halfway, and he gets the edge of the Staggies box and gets a shot away. Kirk Broadfoot? It's so frustrating. But what does Stuart Kettle, what does he do? Because he must be telling them the same things every week and still the same mistakes are happening.
Yeah, well, I thought in his post-match interview, he looked really quite down. He said it was one of the worst performances of during his time at the club. Obviously, having that numerical advantage for so long and not to make it count is worrying. It's difficult because up next is Celtic in the Cup, and Celtic side that will be, I guess, they're under a lot of pressure as well. So it's not necessarily the match that you would that you'd want to go into next. But I mean, I guess there is that. Perhaps the slight chance that if they manage to kind of keep it at 0-0 or sneak a goal early on, then there would be that the Celtic team would become quite nervy. But I would think out of the matches that you, the teams that you want to come up next when you're on this sort of run, probably Celtic wouldn't be high on that list.
My fear is that, as you touched on, Ryan, is the self-inflicted nature of the goals that the Staggies are conceding. That's clearly Stuart Kettlewell's biggest cause for concern. And you can tell that the players had the hairdryer treatment afterwards at the weekend. He's going back to the drawing board here. And I know what you're saying there, Danny, but I don't know if this Ross County team is capable of keeping a clean sheet against one of the leading sides in the country. In a trip to Glasgow to face a Celtic team that needs to bounce back after drawing with Hibs is probably the last thing they need. Then they've got the league leaders, Rangers, coming north, and then they're going to Pittodrie, where you're going to have McCrory, Ferguson and McLennan back in the fold, and probably in all likelihood Johnny Hayes as well. County need to tighten up, but the goals are not flowing quite the same at the other end either, and that's putting more pressure on the back line, I'd suggest. Ollie Shaw's been in a rich vein of form, but nobody else is really contributing. They've got a tough spell ahead of them, and it's funny, we were chatting about this yesterday, but if you look at the Ross County backroom staff, it's a relatively inexperienced support network around Stuart Kettlewell. You do wonder if perhaps an older head in there somewhere would be helpful for the manager to lean on when they're going through a period like that at the minute.
As was touched on earlier, St Mirren are on a great run at the moment. They're 11th on 11 points. Ross County are 9th on 13 points. It's not going to take the form of the two teams to go on for much longer for County to find himself in that relegation playoff spot. And it is early in the season, but as you said, with the run of fixtures County have got coming up, it's certainly very concerning. I would suggest, anyway, we'll move on to more positive things. Elsewhere in the Highlands, Cali Thistle got their biggest win, probably might turn out to be the biggest bit, part of their championship season, biggest moment of their championship season, 2-0 win at home to run away, early front runners, Raith Rovers. It's a massive win for Inverness, isn't it?
Aye, absolutely. I mean, given that the injury problems that they've had at the start of the season, and the kind of the kind of maybe the lack of options John Robertson's had, and we've obviously mentioned before the amount of faith he's had to put in the younger players. It's huge for them to start building up some momentum with the results that they're getting. They obviously had the kind of the win over Arbroath as well, and now this one against Raith, where seemingly Kai Kennedy was hugely impressive, and I saw kind of quite a few fans kind of raving about his performance online, which it kind of stands him in good stead as well. He's earned the trust from the manager, and there's no doubt about his talent. I think it's just kind of getting him more game time going forward. So if he can kind of mesh in there as well with, obviously, Roddy McGregor's played quite a lot of football, same as kind of Cameron Harper and Daniel Mackay. The kind of the more experienced those guys can get under their belt, the better. And James Keatings, again, he's a kind of a seasoned performer at this level, and he's probably one figure that John Robertson would look to as being integral to his side having a good season.
Yeah, it was a fantastic victory, and especially everyone's been raving about Raith Rovers this season and the style that John McGlynn's got them playing in, and they've also got Manny Duco up front, who's been scoring lots of goals for them. So it looked a really difficult game for Cali Thistle on paper, but I guess the disappointing aspect is that they don't play again until a week on Friday when they go down to Queen of the South. But I mean, that means that a few of these injured players that are on the sidelines at the moment are just coming back. Hopefully they'll be a bit fitter. I think they're trying to get a couple of bounce games against Highland League opposition over perhaps two games before they go to Queen of the South. So hopefully they'll go down there with a bit of a stronger squad and manage to build up some momentum from this.
I was going to say, how unlucky do you get from a momentum perspective? You finally get a lot of senior players, a bit of experience back, you have your best performance this season, and then you look at the fixture list and you don't have a game for ages, and it's a Friday nighter at the furthest possible place it could be. It's just, you can't get a break. Inverness, as you touched on, Raith Rovers start to the season, scored 14 goals in their opening four league games. Cali Thistle keep a clean sheet against them. So, I mean, it's a good combination of resilience and attack and play for Cali Thistle that they actually have this season. Now we're seeing them in full flow again.
I think so. I mean, it's funny. I mean, John Robertson lost most of his back four last season, and he's managed to put together another solid unit. If nothing else, whatever happens, I don't think many teams are really going to turn Cali Thistle over in the Championship. Saturday was a huge win for them, especially with Hearts losing at Dunfermline on Friday and Dundee slipping up. I mean, Cali Thistle have still got some ground to make up, but what they're showing is when these guys are available, they're a threat to any side in the league. And you look at Raith, they've been the surprise package in the division, I think. They've wasted no time in mounting a challenge, and they've been really impressive. So keeping a clean sheet against a free-scoring side and then beating them comfortably and probably being unlucky only to have two goals to show for your efforts reflects really well on Inverness. Like Aberdeen at Hamilton tomorrow, I guess, if Cali Thistle want to be top four contenders, a game like next week's trip to Palmerston is the sort of match they need to be aiming to take 3 points from.
Paul, yes or no, are Cali Thistle going to win the Championship?
No, but I think they can. I'm more optimistic of them being a playoff competing side now than I perhaps was a few weeks ago.
All right, excellent. In fact, no there from Paul Farron, it must be added. Okay. Next up, we'll go down the leagues, Peterhead, Cove Rangers and Elgin City, all to discuss. Okay, so where to start? Maybe we'll start with Cove Rangers. Jamie, you were there, their first loss of the season, 1-0 defeat to Falkirk. The full-time, part-time gap, was that? Did that come to the fore, do you think?
I wouldn't say so. I don't think that there was kind of too much fitness disparity between the two teams. Cove seemed to kind of last with them for the kind of the full 90 minutes. It's kind of a one, so as a, kind of a couple of the players have said, it was a one lapse of concentration that let them down that's kind of allowed Callum Morrison to kind of come inside and score. For the majority of the first half, Cove were kind of well in the game. They were creating chances. The second half, a little less so. I don't think they had kind of as much of the play in the second half, but they kind of the press did press late on for an equaliser. Stuart McKenzie in goal had to make a number of good saves. I think I gave him man of the match on Saturday for his performance. It could have been a little more lopsided, which probably would have been unfair on Cove. But the kind of the mood afterwards, wasn't too downbeat. I think they were kind of realistic that this perfect start to the season wasn't going to go on forever. And the way they performed, they didn't go there and get battered. They weren't kind of beaten 4 or 5 nil comfortably. They were well in the game. They created their own chances. They kind of gave Falkirk a kind of a real test. And Falkirk are one of the teams that will be expected to be in title contention this season. And to go kind of away from home and only lose 1-0 against a team that's supposed to be kind of one of the top teams in the league, I don't think it's anything Cove can be too downhearted by.
Obviously, there are teams, as you touched on there, Falkirk, Airdrieonians with their hybrid model, Park Thistle, another full-time team, that are expected to be the teams at the top of League One this season. So given Cove play Airdrieonians next, how important is it that they don't set a trend of losing all their games against these teams and only beating the part-time opponents? I know they've already beaten Park Thistle this season.
Well, I don't think they would focus it on that. I think they would go with the boring cliche of obviously one game at a time. And I don't think from what I've seen so far, there's any kind of real reason for them to go down there and fear kind of playing Airdrieonians. And as we've seen, they've beaten Partick Thistle at home. They've kind of ran Hibs close, and against Dundee, they gave a spirited showing despite going down to 10 and 9 men. So they are more than capable of competing against full-time opponents. And I would fancy them to get a positive result down there on Saturday. I think they'd probably reassess where they're at after the first round of fixtures, kind of complete, and see what the points tally they've got on the board. I don't think they'll make kind of any kind of bold predictions or anything like that. I think the main aim for them is just to stay in this league this season. But say as if they go through say 18 games or so, and they're still well in there within the playoff places, then some of those goals might change.
Elsewhere in League One, it was a change of fortunes for Peterhead. 1-0 win after 4 games without a win. They beat Dumbarton at Balmoor. It's a great start to this 2-game home run they've got. When I was speaking to David Nichols last week and Lenny Wilson, they were talking about how it's so important that they start winning games and making Balmoor a kind of fortress. Again, they won thanks to Ben Armour's goal at the weekend. That's despite injury issues that just don't seem to be clearing up. Simon Ferry, who'd come back after a hamstring injury, is now away with an injury to the other hamstring, and they're hoping they'll only miss this week's game against Forfar. Isaac Lane, the striker, he'd come back, and again, he was forced off with a knee injury. He thought he'd sustained a serious knee injury, but apparently just stepped in a hole, and it's not as bad as anyone thought, and he could be at training tonight. Jason Brown's now free of suspension. They're hoping experienced centre-back Gary McKenzie will be back at training tonight as well. So hopefully it is now going to start cleaning up for Peterhead. Obviously, they had Josh Ray back in goals at the weekend as well. I suppose this weekend's game is one they'll be looking at as very winnable. Forfar haven't been too great this season so far. I think they're sitting rock bottom.
They should be feeling confident. I mean, Jim McInally was delighted, given the problems he had defensively last weekend, to not only win the game but keep a clean sheet. I mean, as you said there, Ryan, he was without McKenzie and Brown. I think Simon Ferry was having to play at the back, and then he goes off after about quarter an hour. So Andy McCarthy had to go back into defence, and it was as makeshift can be for a team in League One. But a win was a great result for the Blue Toon. And if they can get another one against Forfar this weekend, then you have to think they're up and going, and they must be feeling confident with Brown and McKenzie coming back into the fold.
Do we think that there is a worry? Take Lane, for example. He's been missing a few times this season with ongoing knee injuries. I think this might become a pattern of their season in a way.
I think it could be a pattern for most clubs. It's just the nature of such a long break that everyone's had over the summer, and so many muscle injuries and then strains and things happening. It's just, and then guys are overcompensating and they're injuring the other knee or thigh or calf, whatever it may be. It's just, I think that's just the way it's going to be. But
players are trying too hard.
For the part-time clubs who are running on a smaller squad is where they're going to feel the bigger impact. And that's what Peterhead are. They have 18, 19 guys, really, I would regard as a first-team squad. So it doesn't take much to really be affected.
Going down a division, Stirling Albion beaten 2-1 at home by our team, Elgin City. Elgin are now second, I think, thanks to Stephen Bronski and Aidan Sopel's goals. They were pegged back at 1-1 at one stage, Elgin, but they rallied again to win. I mean, they seem to have, it basically seems to all be going pretty well for Elgin this season, doesn't it? It's just a shame that Queen's Park are so strong at the top of the table.
Is well, the first thing I'll say is that the highlights package that Stirling Albion do is quite brilliant and well worth checking out. Lots of kind of nice little work there with their 13 minutes, but it's well worth a watch. Good commentary, good videos at the start and everything, so it's excellent. In terms of Elgin, what was really impressive was the character that they showed at the weekend. Russell Dingwall missed a penalty, and from the resulting corner from that, they scored the opener. So that was a great response to kind of the setback and missing a penalty. And then Stirling score, and that was a complete fluke. It was a bad cross. It was a shanked cross that went in over Tom McHale. But I mean, there's absolutely no way that the Stirling fullback meant that. And then just 3 minutes later, they went back in front through a really good goal, good header from Aidan Sopel. So two real setbacks, and they responded straight away with two goals. It was an impressive display, and Cowdenbeath at home next, and you'd fancy them to keep going and get another win this weekend.
I was going to say, as I mentioned before, Elgin have shown that they're a match for any team in the division, but will they be kicking themselves that this year it just so happens that Queen's Park are probably, I mean, they've won, I think, all five of their games so far? No, they've drawn one, 1-4. But they're so strong, and I don't know, maybe Elgin will be able to overtake them at some stage. But do you think Elgin will be content that they're just in strong playoff contention for this season?
Well, I think they have to be. I think anything else is out with their control, whatever kind of Queen's Park are doing. They've obviously made it clear that they're ambition is to go up through the leagues, and you look at the kind of the players that they've got in that squad, like say Craig Slater and Simon Murray, etc., that there's players there that are geared towards getting Queen's Park to a higher division. They've still got to go out and win games of football at the end of the day, and there's no doubt their resources, now they've kind of gone to like a semi-professional status, that it makes it a little bit easier. But Elgin can't affect that at the end of the day. The ambition is still there for Elgin to get into the playoffs and ultimately to go up. They feel like they've got the squad to do it. And I mean, I think there's quite a few that would have not feared, but kind of been intrigued as to how they would get on without Shane Sutherland this season. And they seem to have kind of covered that base with the additions of a couple of players, and Joel McBeath and Josh Peters, with obviously already having Kane Hester and Smart Sadlaw there. So there's pieces there that the kind of, it makes Elgin a kind of a stronger unit, I think, going forward. And I think Gavin Price has probably got the squad together that he wants now to make a sustained challenge for the playoff places towards the end of the season, which ultimately they would have been in had last season been able to finish.
Okay, that just about ties up our first section of this week's podcast. Before we move on to the big thing, the Highland League preview, one thing I just wanted to ask you about before we move on is, obviously there's been news from England that in certain levels of their coronavirus system, there'll be 4,000 fans allowed back at games. The SFA are now obviously using that as a reason to go to the Scottish Government and say, why can't we have this? What's your guys' take on it? Do you think that, I know we've discussed this several times and everyone probably thinks that we should be getting more fans back into grounds, but do you think it's something that'll be a goer soon?
Without wanting to get too much into the politics of this, the Scottish Government has always kind of been a lot more cautious than the English one, I find. I would be surprised if there's anywhere near that number anytime soon. I think the 300 mark that they've hit with certain stadiums is probably about the limit we can expect for the time being. I know there's obviously bigger stadiums that can accommodate larger amounts of fans, but I would think if kind of recent history is anything to go by, that the Scottish Government would be very wary of kind of giving approval to any kind of number, any kind of crowd of that size, not necessarily due to kind of them being in the stadium itself, but I think more the transport issue and coming to stadiums would be more of a concern for them and more of an opportunity for the virus to spread.
Okay, there's no other business then. We will move on to the important business of the day, previewing the beginning of this season's Highland League, which is due to start on Saturday. It's probably going to be a bit of an open, rambling conversation. I know all you guys will have different people you've spoken to for a mix of the PJ's Highland League supplement. Dave, you'll have just spoken to people because that's what you do. You're out there, you're speaking to Highland League figures. I suppose, who's everyone liking the look of this season? Who you may be a bit concerned about? I know that a lot of teams don't really have much to lose apart from their status as a club because of the financial implications of the coronavirus crisis, but are we just happy to see it back, I suppose?
Well, I saw Fraser on Saturday, and they beat Locos 2-1, but in all honesty, there's a lot more between the two teams than that. And I think Fraser are the strong contenders for the Highland League title this year, especially if they eventually get fans back into Bellesley. There was no one there on Saturday, obviously. But once they do get those vociferous fans right behind them, I think the Brock over there or thereabouts, obviously Brora Rangers will start as the bookies' favourites, I would imagine. I haven't seen Brora as yet, but the way they finished last season, they'll probably take a lot of stopping.
Thirdy, you're a man for the Brock. Are you a vociferous backer of the Brock?
That's just where my bias comes out. I would love to see Fraser Brought up there. I expect to see my hometown team up there. But Dave's right, Brora are the team to beat. The worthy champions should have been in a playoff. Still stand by that. It's going to take a very good side to stop them from winning it again. The one thing that we're all wondering is, how does a 15-game league campaign, how is that going to play out in this? It's going to be fascinating because you only need to lose a couple and you're out of the running, I think.
Paul, you could tell me a little bit about a guy I saw on Saturday for the second time. I saw him in a pre-season friendly for Fraser against Peterhead a few weeks ago, and I saw him again on Saturday. And until he got sent off, he was by miles the best player on the pitch. Name of Lewis Duncan, former Aberdeen youngster. What a talent.
Well, I know Mark Cowie's just over the moon to have this lad. As you said, only 18. Aberdeen let him go. He's a Brock loon, and they've brought him in. And yes, he's young. He's inexperienced, as he showed with his red card, which by the letter of the law, I believe, I think the studs were shown, so he has to go, and I'm sure he'll learn from that. But he seems, from what Mark was saying, the ball he put through for the first goal was top draw. He doesn't know if he really has too many guys in his team that was capable of having that vision. It's good to see young players coming through in the Highland League, and the Brock, as we know, have always done that. So in terms of Lewis Duncan, I haven't seen him myself yet, but everyone's talking him up when they see him play. He's going to be one to watch for sure.
He not only made that first one, with it was a tremendous threaded pass, he set up the second one as well, and he just looked a danger all over the pitch. He's strong, very physical, and not very big.
Well, like you say, we'll see what he looks like once the season starts.
So, in terms of the other title contenders, Fraserburgh as well, to be fair, how are we getting the sense of the confidence? Are they coming out and saying that they're wanting to compete for the title, the likes of Brora, Inverurie, Fraserburgh, Fairmartin as well, Rothes even? Are they saying that they're wanting to go for it in this special season?
Well, I think having spoken to kind of folk at Locos a couple of times, I think Andy Lowe's under no illusions that kind of he wants Locos to be up there challenging for the title this season. He's had a bit of work to do over the summer with his squad. Obviously, Johnny Smith's gone to Fairmartin now. Chris Angus has left the club, and Ryan Stott's kind of taken some time away to focus on his job. So he's had to do a little bit of work in the forward areas. He's brought in Nathan Mears from Cove, and he's quite pleased to get Kieran Shanks in, who left Aberdeen in the summer. And he'd been training with Locos for a wee while. He signed just before the Shire Cup game against Turriff last week, and he scored in his debut in there, and he scored again at the weekend. So I think there's some promising signs there for him. Are they strong enough to challenge for the title? Well, I think we don't really know who's going to be strong enough to challenge until we kind of get the first few games underway, because it's going to be vital to get off to a quick start. I mean, if you drop points in your first couple of games, you're already going to be pretty much discounted from title contention. So if you can get a good run of five or six results going, you're going to be in a strong position. Same the same way I would argue with Rothes. I mean, after picking up silverware for the first time in 40 years already, and the kind of the progress that they've made under Ross Jack before last season was curtailed, I think you'd be a brave man to say they won't be up there challenging kind of come the end of this season.
I think in a normal season where teams are playing each other home and away, it would be very difficult to look past Brodo Rangers, given how they played last year and how they're set up. But I mean, this season, I mean, one defeat might even be enough to kind of take the title away from you. So it makes it very, very exciting and puts a lot of pressure on, particularly those head-to-head games. And then if some of these teams were to suffer a shock defeat somewhere against one of the lower teams in the league, then that could just take them right out of the title equation. I think you could have any of maybe six teams there that could potentially win the league. It'll be very, very interesting few months ahead. I mean, Dave, maybe a question for you, but I mean, what would be the expectations for Rothes this season, given that they have got that Highland League Cup now? I mean, would the expectation be that they would be pushing in the top two or three spots this term around?
I expect, Danny, that they would be. I think the make or break for Rothes is going to be the beginning of January, in the first 4 weeks in January, the 2nd, 9th, 16th, 23rd. They're away to Brora, home to Fraserburgh, away to Fermartin, and then away the long trip to Wick Academy. Now, if Rothes could win a couple of those and maybe even get a couple of draws, they'd be right in the mix. And I think winning that trophy at Huntly against Bucky Thistle will have given them huge confidence. I saw the celebrations on the pitch after the game. I don't know if there's much celebrations back in Rothes after the game. There should have been, but of course with the COVID restrictions, it might have been pretty difficult for them. But I think the players would have taken a huge amount of encouragement from that performance, and as did Ross Jack, the manager. And of course, Rothes are in the handy position of their first match. When they play their first match, they're going to be allowed 200 fans into McKessick Park, and they're going to be 200 home fans, and that can certainly make a difference, because if you've ever been at McKessick Park with the guys clad in their orange and black, they really can be a 12th man in the pitch for Rothes.
You touched on Brora, Danny, and I'm going to bring Fermartin into this as well. Those two teams, I think Adam McKinnon from Ross County is on loan at Brora now, but those two teams don't strike me as having done a lot of strengthening. Obviously, we talked about somebody Fraserburgh added. We talked about it being quite a lot of change at Inverurie. It's obviously a difficult time to be making changes, but do you think Brora and Fermartin will be happy with their squads regardless?
I think so. I think they've both, on paper, they've both got quite strong squads. I mean, I would probably say that Brora have still got the strongest squad there. They'll start the season with the strongest squad. I think you aren't going to get too many Highland League teams just bringing in players for the sake of it, because they don't want to run big squads this year more than the other. I mean, the one manager that I've spoken to that seemed to be really happy with the strength and depth that he's got is Graeme Stewart at Bucky. He feels like he's got quite a lot of options. So perhaps they're one of the teams that we should be looking at as well. Bucky have got players that have been there and done it, and if they manage to get on a good run at the start of the season, then you would fancy them to make a real push for it.
Even kind of away from the title picture, which I know is going to kind of probably dominate most people's attentions, there's kind of intriguing stories further down the league as well. I mean, for me, I'm going to probably be keeping an eye on kind of how some of these new managerial appointments are getting on, kind of having spoken to a few of them. I mean, Keith have obviously brought in Andy Roddy and his assistant Tommy Wilson to replace Dean Donaldson, who resigned in October. Their ambition is to kind of get back up there and challenging in the top six again and challenging for trophies. They acknowledge that they've not got the biggest budget in the world, but they want to be contenders again. So that'll be kind of one to watch. At the opposite end of the table, Fort William, I think it caught many people by surprise when they announced last month that their manager, Callum McLean, and the chairman, Peter Murphy, had left the club for personal reasons. As far as we're aware, there's been no new chairman appointed, but they brought in Ashley Hollier as the new manager, who had been in charge of Inverness amateur side NMM Sams. And I spoke to John Treasurer last week, who's kind of made a comeback from injury for them this season. And there seems to be kind of a real mood of positivity around the club and what Ashley's been able to do in a short space of time. They've kind of split the training groups up now, so the players will be training one night a week in Inverness, and while the kind of Fort William boys will then go and do their own thing, and then they'll kind of train together later on in the week. So it's opened the avenue up to a whole kind of new pool of players that maybe wouldn't have considered Fort previously. And then you look elsewhere, a couple of the other North clubs, Clack have replaced Sandy McLeod with Jordan McDonald, who was kind of last in work at Inverness City, the junior team, as a manager. And then he came in initially as part of Sandy's backroom team. And then when Sandy stepped down, he was kind of promoted to the kind of managerial role. And he's kind of seemed very optimistic about what he can achieve with Clack, who obviously got a strong heritage of promoting young players. And then you've got Gary Manson up at Wick as well, who's been handed the job on a permanent basis after taking it kind of in a caretaker role initially. They kind of seem to have kept the bulk of their squad together, added a few more younger players, and with the kind of the knowledge that Gary has of the club and the kind of the Caithness football scene, it'll be interesting to see how he kind of gets on as in his kind of first managerial job.
The great thing about the Highland League is that it's so wide open normally, but in this 15-game campaign, it's even more unpredictable. And as Dave touched on, you've also got the added factor of clubs in Aberdeenshire are not going to have fans coming to watch them for their home matches initially. And that does give an advantage to the other sides. How that plays out is going to be fascinating, given the Shire has traditionally been such a stronghold in the Highland League.
Jamie made a point about all these promising young managers coming into the game, and Ashley Hollier, as he said, and of course Andy Roddy coming back with Tommy Wilson. But also there's Alan Hale, who's now at Huntley, the former Maud and Keith manager, and he's a great student of the game, as Alan Hale, and I expect that he will turn Huntley around this season, and they may be, if you go to Christie Park, it's going to be a tricky assignment, that's for sure.
If we look at the first weekend's fixtures, I suppose an interesting thing about it is the fact that none of the six teams we've labelled as title contenders, in inverted commas, are playing one another. So it becomes very apparent pretty quickly if one of those teams has slipped up. When you look at Devon Vale against Brora, Locos against Keith, Lossie against Fraserburgh, Rothes hosting Huntley, Turriff United hosting for Martin and Wick hosting Bucky. What do we think the best chance for maybe an upset is out of those games?
Wick Bucky's the toughest.
Bucky's got the toughest game, I would say.
Yeah, the big trip to Wick. What about Wick, actually? Because obviously Wick, it's always been their sort of the thing that benefits them and the thing that curses them to an extent, how far away they are from the other teams. Makes their away games tough, makes their home games pretty desirable. Do you think they're a dark horse for breaking in that top six?
I think Wick Academy are always a force at Harmsworth Park. But one thing they will miss is the driving force in midfield of Sam Mackay. Sam was an ever-present in my team of the Highland League season. Sam is going back to his roots now. He's a Golspie boy, and he's going to be playing for Golspie Sutherland in the North Caledonian League, and that's a huge miss for Wick Academy. They really need to find somebody in midfield to replace Sam, who's a great talent.
In terms of that section then, below the six contenders, let's just predict for now that the six teams we've labelled as title contenders will finish in the top six places. They might not, they probably won't, because it's football and things are unpredictable. But if you were to pick a team of the rest that would finish highest in the league, who would it be? Would it be Nairn? Would it be Huntley? Have you got a team in mind as a favourite?
I'd have to say Nairn, I would think, because I like what they've kind of built there under Ronnie Sharp. He's obviously been there now for 4.5 years. While they've still got a young squad, it's a young squad that's been together for a number of seasons. They've got someone in Max Ewan, who came to the club as a 16-year-old. He's still yet to turn 20. That he's already amassed close to 100 games for the club. He scored 30 goals. And them getting Scott Davidson last season from Brora, who's, again, he's still only his mid-20s. He's been around the Highland League for a few years. He scored plenty of goals. Getting him last season, I think, was a real coup. And I like what they can do. They've always kind of been kind of a team that's been looking to improve year on year. And I think with a good run of form, they could be again. They could be a top six contender if kind of results go their way.
Yeah, I think I'll probably go with Jamie as well. I think Nairn County, especially at home, on that magnificent surface at Station Park. Ronnie Sharp will have them wound up. And yeah, Nairn with my choice also.
Strathspey, they sort of been slowly building over the years. I don't know if they've got enough to break into that top six, but I think they'll be competitive. I'm interested to see how Chris Hunter gets on at Turriff United. That was a big change there last year, became a very young side. They've got three young Aberdeen lads on loan, so they're going to be something of a dark horse to look for. Then you've got Lossiemouth, who had a much improved defensive record last year. They're looking to build on that. And they've brought Charlesworth back. So if they can start finding some goals there, that's the big thing for Lossie. If they can, because there were so many close games that they just came out on the wrong side of last season. If they can start turning those tight matches into a point here or the odd win, then they can push up the table as well.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think Nairn would be the team that you'd possibly look for as in that kind of seventh position. But I mean, I think that Wick had good spells last season, and they might be able to do something. Huntley under Alan Hale are quite intriguing this season to see how they get on. And Paul's kind of mentioned one there, but I mean, Turriff have strengthened with the three Aberdeen players and the young players they've got. Have got another season of experience under them, so. Perhaps they could have a bit of a stronger campaign this time around.
Paul mentioned Lossiemouth and in particular Martin Charlesworth. He's got all the experience in the world, Martin. He won back-to-back titles with Bucky Thistle and he's scored goals wherever he's gone. So that's a well-made point, Paul. Martin Charlesworth, I expect to get, well, for Lossie, probably 15 to 20 goals if it had been a whole season, but certainly double figures over this restricted season.
That gives us something else to waffle about then. Obviously, Chris Angus, joint top scorer last season. He's decided to leave Inverary Locos. He's not got a new club yet. Who knows if he'll still be in the Highland League for this season. Who do we see as being the top goal getter this time around? Andrew McRae at Brora, Scott Barber or somebody, Paul Campbell at Fraserburgh maybe. Is there anyone you've got your eye on? Is he's going to be the top man this time around?
Well, the three you've mentioned there, they will be up there somewhere to kind of contend for that top goal scorer's spot. Scott Davidson, who I just mentioned, I think he'll be in and around the contenders as well. Given the way Kieran Shanks has started the season for Locos, he could be the man to fill the goal scoring void up there left by Chris Angus. I'm not sure if you're looking for a dark horse or anything like that in terms of finding someone that can kind of come in and fill that void at the top. I mean, Cammy Keith's always been up there somewhere with the goals that he's kind of relied on for Keith, and I think he'll still be a key man for them going forward. So there's numerous contenders there. I couldn't really pinpoint one of them that I'll say will run away with it, but I'm gonna put my hopes on Scott Davidson being up there at least.
You mentioned Shanks there, Jamie. I saw him on Saturday. He scored the goal. But one player that wasn't playing for Locos on Saturday, apart from Chris Angus, obviously, was Neil Gold. And he's a 20, 30, even 40 a season goal scorer for Locos in the past. And once little Goldie gets back to full form, I wouldn't back against him being the top goal scorer.
Paul.
Here's one for you.
Gary McGowan.
Dane Ballard in Devon Vale. Just coming back in February, and then the season was stopped about a month later. Poor lad had been out for about 18 months after a serious knee operation. He was doing very well for the goal, getting the goals for the Vale prior to his injury. If he's back and firing all cylinders, he'll make a huge difference, not just to Steve Dolan's team, but in terms of a contribution in the league as a whole.
Okay, I think that maybe just about covers it for the first weekend of the Highland League. Obviously, the fixtures I didn't mention, Fort William against Strathspey. We've got Nairn at home to Clackenacuddin. Actually, that's something that's maybe worth discussing. Clackenacuddin, last season, obviously the hammer blow in the middle of the season of their ground almost burning down, I suppose. That would have been really unsettling. Do you think they'll have a better season this time around just by virtue of not having such a catastrophe unfold?
I think having the comforts of home, it's always going to be an underrated facet until you're actually done without it. I mean, they obviously had a couple of games at Canal Park, obviously where Highland Rugby Club play, and they had to have the initial derby with Nairn last season postponed because the ground wasn't going to be ready in time. And then they were back there for one of their last games before the league was curtailed against Fullmartin. And I believe our esteemed colleague, Mr. Edwards, was there on that evening for the homecoming celebration.
Yeah. Clachnacuddin, they're lovely people. They're exceedingly hardworking people who run Clachnacuddin. And I think under Jordan McDonald, a promising young manager with his own ideas, they could well be a force to reckon with on their day.
Okay, well, that really is it this time then. Thanks to my esteemed colleagues, Danny, Jamie, Paul, and of course, Dave, for joining me today. Thanks, guys.
Thanks very much for the invite. I really appreciate it.
If you've enjoyed this episode of Northern Go, you can like and subscribe to the podcast on your favourite podcasting app, whether that's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any other. If you've got something to say to us, to berate us, whatever, the email's northerngoal@dctmedia.co.uk. And I suppose, finally, enjoy the return of Highland League football, or whatever football you're interested in this weekend. Hope you loved the episode, and if you did, we'd be grateful if you could leave us a review or rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to pick up your copies of the Press and Journal and Evening Express every day for the best football writing and analysis in the North.